Good morning. It is Maundy Thursday, I think it's called, the Thursday before Good Friday. And it's the final brass tacks for the week, and maybe the final one that I do for a while, as I will be off from Good Friday. There are certain subjects that I try hard not to comment on while I'm still upset and I think passionate about it. There are, however, times when I hear comments or I see comments that provoke a response, and I am yet to learn how not to respond to that type of provocation. This has been a particularly tragic week in lots of ways. Tragedies that include the loss of life, tragedies that include our inability to deal with each other in a rational manner, whether it is the use of our beaches, the way we deal with each other at a personal and even at a political level. Over the years, I have heard females in conversation with other females or in general conversation making comments about what they would or would not do if they caught their men, that's what they call them, cheating. Some say they'd wait until he was asleep and pour hot oil on him. Some say they'd burn his clothes, chop up his clothes, and make other comments about some sort of physical and emotional punishment. I've usually dismissed it as just idle talk or people speaking out of passionate disappointment. I have never considered it statements being made because women think that men are their possessions or that they can't walk away from relationships that have ended. They are violent and possessive men. And on behalf of men, I apologize for those of my gender who behave in that manner. And if they are females who have only known or had possessive and violent men in their lives, I feel sorry for them. But I want them to know that there are other types of males in the world. I can assure you that there are men who see females as equal partners in their journey through life. Men who willingly share their hopes, their dreams, and yes, their possessions and their bodies with one partner. And would like to believe that the trust and respect is reciprocated. And such men, perhaps, on seeing their partners being used as physical air vessels of pleasure, only to be discarded or returned to them rejected, may feel a sense of personal violation. And I know there are some women, sadly, who know what personal violation is. And although I don't want them to recall the painful incident, I am sure they recall their response to those incidents of violation. I am personally aggrieved, and I take umbrage, when every time there is some misguided or irrational male reaction to some incident, it's characterized as men feeling that they own women or not being able to walk away. I wonder if people understand what I mean when I say violation. When you find a trusted partner in what, I think the Latin phrase is what? In delicto, in flagrante delicto, I think is the Latin phrase. Thank you, my Latin master. There's a proverb that originates with the inhabitants of the continent we now call America. It says, "Great Spirit, help me never to judge another until I've walked in his moccasins." I'm Dennis Johnson, and this is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us at 434-1790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-IVOB, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I am fine. Thank
you,
sir.
How's the family?
They're doing well.
Look, I want to read a little thing here for you first, and then If given the privilege, I want to say something connected to it. Mm-hmm. Thank God we can start anew. This is the article by, you know, every piece of paper I see with writing on it, Dennis, I just check it, you know. Because I work out that to become educated and intelligent, you have to understand how other people think. And if you believe that you can be successful only thinking about how you think, you're making a big mistake. And you know, sir, you always have to make adjustments because sometimes you might be right. But because you are right, don't mean that there's an adjustment you can make that could bring some balance. That's instead correct. Of you arguing that you're right. Oh, you're right, Mr. Johnson.
Agreed with you, sir.
So I can read something here to you, and I hope all whoever listened to it would understand it. If you are reading this article on an incandescent light bulb, mm-hmm. then you should stop for a moment and say, thanks to Thomas Edison, I am not reading by candlelight or by the light of a gas lamp. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that the work of this American scientist has made our lives much more pleasant. However, before patenting all of these inventions, that have improved our quality of our life, Edison had to deal with many failures and courageously went through various situations that were anything but pleasant, mm-hmm. like the one that occurred on December 9th, 1914. After many years of hard work, Edison managed to build a plant in West Oregon, mm-hmm. New Jersey. But that night, a raging fire reduced the plant facilities to ashes. And in the blink of an eye, the work of a lifetime vanished amidst the flames. However, Edison, instead of lamenting over his misfortune, as he roamed the site, said, All our mistakes are burned up. Thank God we can start anew. Yeah. Regardless of what has happened in 2016, as we begin our journey through the days, weeks and months of this year, we should do well to consider the words and proclamation that God can start anew, a new beginning, and is a precious gift, mm-hmm. we need to make the most of, and we are receiving that gift. If at the start of this year, the breath of life still flowed freely within us, then we all receive the wonderful opportunity to start anew. I would like to propose a challenge to all my readers. I propose that we begin 2017, this is 2018, so I know this is the year. Mm-hmm. That we begin 2017, which we should have begun then, by making the words of the Apostle Paul our battle cry. One thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead. I press on towards the goal. And that's Filipino 3:13-14. If we treasure this message, if we make it a part of our daily lives, mm-hmm. we can assure you that 2017, which is not the 2018, mm-hmm. will be a year of full blessings. No. Mr. Johnson, you hear that, right?
I heard it. Yes, sir.
Look, fully. The truth is that Barbados is in turmoil. It's not in turmoil because the government, all this bad, because as far as I'm concerned, it's not good, but it's in a turmoil because it's not bad. It's in a turmoil because the opposition don't do nothing. It's in turmoil because educated people ain't doing things. And then in turmoil, because teachers and putting their life on the line sometimes have to face children with knives and so to teach them. It is not in turmoil because police unfortunately come to our aid and we curse them instead of we trying to appreciate them and show them all the love so they can keep the country. And then turmoil because there's a word called greed. And I believe that if Barbadian people of all sorts to really analyze within them and start looking at where they can do better for people instead of trying to cover everything, we will have a better Barbados.
I can't disagree with you at all, sir. I have to say, Brother Nasser, I want you to leave a contact number with the producer when you're finished for me. There are people who keep calling me and asking me for your number, and my phone crashed, so I don't have your cell number anymore. Let me say this to you. I listened to the back and forth, for example, on the issue on Crane Beach, the issue on the beach by Sandals in on the South Coast.
Yeah.
The issue of where staff members park and block the road and all these issues.
Yeah.
And I made a comment the last time, but as usual, when I make my comments, I try to make them general.
I know.
On the topic, but general, so that nobody could say, I suing you because you said. They could gain whatever they want to gain from what I say, but I choose my words carefully now.
Yeah.
I said the last time I was on, and I will repeat.
Yeah.
If I am running a hotel and you and Graham are putting chairs on the beach for my guests.
Yeah.
And Graham decide, I can step up one. I can provide chairs and an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide, okay, I can't afford chair and umbrella, but my sister could bring an umbrella and a towel.
Right.
So my sister will provide towels and umbrellas. I can provide chairs.
Right.
And then a third fella come along and say, oh, okay, we got chairs, we got umbrellas. I can't do chairs and umbrellas. Oh, I can buy cold beers and walk up and down and sell the guests.
Yeah.
Why should I, if my guests are being treated fairly by all of you out there, right? Why should I expense myself to get a chair, an umbrella, and somebody to serve beers just so the tree all ain't gonna have a work? But that ain't making no sense to me.
It cannot make sense.
And then I can say my bottom line going because I spending too much money on losing beach towels and chairs mashing up and I got to restrap them and umbrellas blowing away and I got to put them. So I got to increase the price or lay off my staff because my bottom line changed. Rather than going outside and saying to you, Graham, and Graham's sister, just make sure you treat my guests properly. Don't harass them. Do this, do that. Work within my guidelines. Great to have you along. We're part of a team. Boss, what is wrong with what I just tell you? We don't seem to understand what business we are in. And I agree with you totally on the subject of greed.
Greed is the problem. Listen, Mr. Johnson. Thompson, the late Thompson. You see, because I realize what's going to happen in Barbados if we don't bring some balance soon. See? So even me, I can make some adjustments. Not that I'm fighting for nobody in Barbados, but I would like to see Barbados really come to a logical, intelligent conclusion. Do you realize that if that 40% procurement
were
put out as the government said today, we will have less crime, there will be no young people out there unnecessary killing? Mr. Johnson, I went to a trail where there were 30 people working. Not one man ain't getting paid, only the two or three top people. All the other apprentices down there working for nothing. But you know what? We knew once we learned to well and once we learned to do little things that Mr. Smith would find me another day because we got somewhere to look for a job and we didn't get paid. But that's, we had some place to start, right?
Yep.
Mr. Linton and Robert Street produced that outstanding man called that Jones Funeral Home. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Jones that was the bodywork expert that revolutionized the development of motor cars, Keith Jones.
Keith.
He went to trade at Linton and Robert Street, Mr. Johnson. No money. And then when he get, you think we were about the pest? We wanted to learn the skill. Because we knew once we learned the skill that they can't dominate us no more, right? Here it is today. No little companies, no place about the place employing people. Every minute somebody laying off people. You working and making a lot of money in your company for the last 40 years or 20 years or even 5 years. But things get a little rocky now. You may be making $1 million every year. And because things get a little rocky, you're going to send home a staff that will help you to make $1 million every year for all those years. Mr. Jones, I think it would be nice to make $500,000 and keep the staff.
If you understood that the reason why you made $1 million was because of the
staff.
Work done by your staff. And
right.
That's why, again, I keep telling people all the time, right? When machines break down, we call in a repairman to fix it.
Right.
When our staff break down, we say they're home pretending to be sick.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, if a machine breaks down because you put in incorrect voltage or you overload or whatever, and you call in a repairman because you understand that it needs servicing and repair, but why you feel your staff staying home because they want to spite you?
That's right.
But that's what people say. You
know,
and we send you to the company doctor to prove that you ain't sick.
Yeah, I know he can do it.
But you can't do it, sir.
Right.
But I know you can't do it. He could tell you, I could find no reasonable or medical reason why Dennis Johnson going home. But you can't tell me I ain't sick.
That's right. But let me go a little further, Mr. Johnson. A lot of these people who become millionaires in Barbados and very successful business people that have staff at home, layoff should ask them tomorrow to be back on work by Tuesday. You have to be prepared to make less and keep the workers and the people in Barbados employed. You do not need all this excess money at the expense of young people worrying if mommy or daddy can go to a job and preparing to destroy to get food. Am I wrong, Mr. Johnson?
Sir, you're not wrong at all. I totally agree with
that. What is wrong with a society that's so educated?
Because perhaps they're driven by directors and directives and a cycle that says, get the most out of the least. Somebody says, I hate to go to a beach and an unkempt person harass me to buy stupidness. That's not what I said, you know. But anyhow, okay. I take your point. Thank you, sir, for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Yes, now.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
I was calling line or floor, and I was explaining to a lady that when 23 minutes past 9, the phone, I was talking to my mother on the phone. The phone just cut completely out. I come next door to make a phone call to let them know. I plug out the box. I plug out the phone from the box door and went outside and then come back in the house. And they plug back in the box first. All the lights come back on. And then they plug back in the landline, back in the modem box. I call in, they report on the phone. They tell the woman everything I do. She telling me, no, go back and do the same thing. I will have be stupid now to go back and do the same thing when the phone ain't coming on. Ain't giving me the dial tone. And not only that, the lady don't understand nothing I telling her. I don't understand why it is that. We can't get back a system here in Barbados that when you call in to report a landline, got a fault or a problem, that somebody can understand what you're telling them on the other end. Then you telling somebody that from another island, something wrong with your phone, and they may understand. You need to go back and do unplug the modem, unplug the landline. They may understand nothing you're saying. And for years, this has been going on. You asking them to get back somebody here to run a company that when the phone is not working, you could speak with some person that can understand what you are saying. That the lady understand nothing I say. When you call Barbados Water Authority too, the same thing, you're getting a machine. All the companies about here doing it.
Ma'am, I know what you're talking about. I don't know that they plan to change the system. That's the truth. Because I remember at one point they did say that they were going to return the call center to Barbados. The problem is, however, if that is the printed answer that they give to that question, no matter where they put the call center, that's the answer you get, you know. You see, that's the unfortunate problem. When you try to operate a company and a system from an external source, what you're going to have is a printed document or a document online that says, if the service call says my telephone line is not responsive or there's no dial tone, tell them to. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. In other words, the person who is answering you don't have a clue how to fix your problem, you know. All they have, all they have is a sheet that tells them what to say. And all they're doing is sitting down there telling you what the sheet of paper says. They cannot tell you anything else because they're not a service technician. Ma'am, I remember a situation where there were two lines going into the house I was at. And there were times when both phones would ring. All right? And every time I called, they would tell me, oh, water has gotten into the line. Do this, do that, do that, do the other. Eventually, I got vexed and I called a guy who used to work at the telephone company, who runs his own company. And I said to him, let me tell you what's wrong with my phone. Every time one phone rings, both lines ring at the same time. I presume that somebody ran a line through the conduit without taking out the line that was in there before. And it has bruised and they're grounding off at each other. He asked me, you're a technician? I said, no, I am not a technician. I am an idiot. So let me tell you what I can do, right? I hold the line, I pull it out the wall. Guess what? The lines were frayed and they were rubbing off against each other. I said, no, run another line, please. That's not my job. You need to get another person to do it. So I tell you, no problem. I can do it. And I will pay somebody else to run it, and then I'll pay you to come back and install the phone. The problem is he was a technician. So he could diagnose a problem by walking through the steps that the person on the phone would tell you. Okay. The problem is that the people who answer in the phone could only tell you what's written down on a sheet of paper in front of them. So it don't matter whether they're in Brazil, St. Lucia, or Barbados, they can tell you, unplug the modem, unplug the telephone, wait 20 seconds, plug back in the modem, plug back. You notice I tell you without checking anything, right? Because I hear it already too. Ma'am, they're answering from a sheet of paper. And they have no idea how to fix what your problem is. Ma'am, I know that.
All of that.
Ma'am,
and
I know that.
Still ain't giving me no doubt on.
Ma'am, I know
and
that.
And the lady tell me,
go back again.
And you need to do it again.
Yeah, I know. That's all that's on the sheet of paper in front of her or on the screen that she's looking at. Can't tell you another thing because she's not a technician.
People always think that you have to got a degree in order for you to got common sense. Common sense is be everything.
I got a degree in stupidity.
Johnson, next problem I have, I see there around St. Thomas roundabout there by St. Thomas Post Office, right? If I tell you the amount of potholes that there, if you shun one, you're going to drop in six more. And right there, need paving right away. The same way how I see the pave down there by, that is St. Thomas there, Cairn Garden.
Mm-hmm.
The pave all of there, because a minister lived down through that gap, so they had to pave it. So I would like them to come and fix up top of there for me there by St. Thomas Post Office, body roundabout. Because if it's shun one, you're going to drop in six more.
Okay.
And then when you're going down there by the same minister, they got a pothole right in the corner. When you shun off of that one, you're going to land into another one. So I don't understand how the paving the roads boat here in Barbados anymore.
Okay, ma'am.
You do have a nice day.
You too, ma'am.
Bye.
The WhatsApp says, good morning, Dennis. Just a question. Following on from your conversation with NASA, what would you do or should an employer do with staff if the downturn in business is so bad that you actually have nothing for them to do? Do you simply say, come to work, sit down, or do nothing, and I will pay you? Just asking a reasonable question. So your question is reasonable. And I do not think that either Mr. Nasser or myself would be insane enough to believe that if you have absolutely no business to do, or you have a downturn in business, that you tell your staff, come sit down and do absolutely nothing. I would suggest to you that if you have a staff that have worked hard for you over a period of time and you know their capabilities, what you need to do is to sit with your staff and say, look, we have a situation here where I cannot afford to keep all of you on. I understand that over the years you've done so for me. Here's what I would like to do. Are you willing to share your workload with your colleagues on this basis so that you all at least get a $5 at the end of the week, rather than I have to send 20 of you home, keep only two, because that's all I can afford to pay? There are ways in which you sit down, sir, and you reason with people, because you're working with an institution and they are part of your institution. I am sure you do not get up one morning and decide, I am not going to wash my counter, I am not going to clean my shelves. I am not going to put anything on it because there's a downturn in business and nobody's coming in. So I will not stock my shelf. You see, these questions that you all consider reasonable, to me, they're very unreasonable. They're unreasonable because it means to me that you do not want to apply your mind to a situation, rather picking on a topic and making a contribution because you disagree with whatever is being said. You know, it is Holy Week. There's a two-car smash-up at the bottom of the Rendezvous T Junction that's causing a backup of traffic all the way up to the roundabout at the top. It used to be the Garfield Sobers roundabout. I suppose it is still called that, although Sir Gary's statue no longer stands there. So if you can avoid the area, please do so. You know, I have a gentleman who acts as several things, including producer and technical operator from time to time, who is a brilliant young man. Eh? And one day, well, perhaps one day, he'll sit in this chair and share some of his brilliance with you. He said to me, if I am a service provider and there's a downturn in my business and I have to send home some of my staff, I'd call in some of them and say, look, I have some items here. You know, I have a grocery. Here are some items. I have this stock here. It's getting close to the end. Take it. Go home with it. Go through your neighborhood. See who you could sell it to. Half of what you sell belongs to you. The other half bring back to pay for my stock. So you could ease up yourself while I can't pay for you. There are ways to work around things. You work through it. You talk to your people and you communicate. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mr. Johnston.
Good morning, sir.
First, let me make the statement. Whatever is on your voice box, discard it.
My voice box, okay.
I left
a message? Okay.
I left a message there. Mr. Johnston, okay. My prayers have been answered this morning. And the reason for this is that, not that the other moderators are not equipped, but I'd hope that you would have been on. It's a very serious matter I want to deal with this morning. And before I go, I want to say openly that this matter crisscrossed all Barbados who are involved in the electoral process of 2018. I hope the candidates are listening. I hope the Prime Minister who is responsible for the electoral process is listening. I hope the leader of the opposition is listening. I hope the media is listening. And there's a reason for this. Having been involved in the electoral process for 52 years, going 53, I am concerned that, you know, we talk about having a process that has gone forward as far as the Caribbean is concerned. This is what I've come up with after a careful consideration. It had nothing to do with the staff of the electoral board. You can't give some person a blunt pen to write with and expect you're going to get results. And this is what has been happening as far as the electoral process in Barbados is concerned. Mr. Johnston, can you imagine that in this day and age we are going into an election and you have got people on the list who have been on the list and have died since 2016, since 2004. And somewhere along the line, these people cannot be removed. I am asking the people from the electoral board to deny what I am saying now. Deny what I am saying because they cannot. You've got people on the list who have died since 2016, since 2004, and they're still on the list. Why? These certificates of death, which are supposed to be coming from the registration department, has not been sent on. So the electoral office cannot remove them. You've got people who are on the electoral list that live overseas for 28, 30, 40 years. And their names are still on the list when they should be removed. The postal department. There's no sync between the postal department, the electoral department, and the registry that will solve some of these problems. I am saying this morning, and I'm saying that this is my personal experience. That you have a situation where there are people on the list that live it elsewhere that cannot be found. The candidates cannot take them off. Even though there's no cause to say that they're dead because the death certificates are now going on. So the candidates who are out there complaining, and I'm speaking to the candidates on both sides, I'm speaking to the candidates who are seeking office until the process, the electoral process in Barbados is covered in the area that I'm covering and saying it should be done. I may be wrong. You had no numerators. You've got no numerators. No numerators. And one of the important aspects of electoral process is to have numerators. You've got people going all about a country to find out if this body still lives there, if the next body still lives there. And it is one of the most difficult situations for staff to undertake. You've got an area that is on the staff, that the cadets which they brought in to work does not have a clue of what is going on inside of the processing of the electoral situation.
But, sir, you have a situation where people have been in the newspaper complaining that they can't get death certificates for their loved ones from the funeral homes because of some problem in the process and how long it takes for them to get these death certificates. So if there's a problem with the issuing of death certificates in general, then you have another problem that is compounded. It. My uncle died quite a while ago, and his name is still on the electoral list. And Peter has made a comment on more than one occasion that one of the reasons he says that the turnout, he's always questioned the turnout figures because
the percentage turnout because they're
voters who simply cannot turn out.
Because they're not in position to turn out.
Because they're not there, right. So that the percentage is incorrect, yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things he said as well. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, let me come back to Mr. Johnson. And I want all Barbados to listen. This mm-hmm. isn't what anybody told me, Mr. Johnson. And I think you know me well enough that any time I speak on anything, I would have passed that road. I would have experienced that. Imagine you have lost your ID. Mm-hmm. And you have to go to the registry to get a birth certificate. Mr. Johnson, you lost your ID. It cannot be found. I am here this morning. Why? How can I help you? I am here to get a birth certificate. Where's your ID? You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That the very ID that you have lost.
Yeah, that's what they're asking for. You have to produce it. You have to produce it.
It is the most impossible thing you could think about. Further to that, let me come back into the electoral process. You have a situation where you have people are talking about party lists. People are talking about buying votes. The situation is not so much of the band of votes. The situation is that there are too many people that cannot be found on an electoral list. There are too many people. And similar to what we are saying is that they cannot be removed. The electoral office have no authority to move those persons and let them challenge me on this because they know it's a fact. Unless you have a death certificate to certify that that person is dead, you cannot move the person off the list. So you have a situation where there's a dead person. There's no certificate to prove that the person has died. So the person remains on the list. You have a situation where you've got in every constituency over 60, 70 people that are not accounted for. You cannot move those persons because no death certificate has been submitted. So that is why the candidates out in the field. And that is why the electoral process is as it is. I am calling on the Prime Minister. And I'm saying this. Yes, he says you're going to have a landscape as far as the politics is concerned. Now, I am seeing a lot of petitions going before the court after this general election. I'm seeing petitions.
For what?
People are not happy about this. Candidates are not happy about this decision. Candidates are not happy about that. And then eventually you would have an election where most of it is carried before the magistrate courts of Bridgetown, and there's a possibility that we will have a hangover. I've seen it happen already,
really?
Mr. Johnson.
Really?
I've seen it. Let me come home to you.
Why, Mark?
I'm glad. And I hope the media are listening. I hope the media understand that there is a reason for satisfiedness. And I'm glad that Viobi have given me this privilege this morning. Because somewhere along the line, you need to talk to the people at the electoral board. You need to find out. It is not just the electoral office. It's run by a board. The Labour Party has members on the board.
What do you want the board to do, sir?
What I want, the system.
Mark, it can't be changed in time for this next election.
It cannot be changed, but what
in time for this next election, I said. I didn't say it can't be changed.
It can be changed, but I'm saying as I said to you earlier, Mr. Johnson, I can't give you a blunt pen and expect that I can see writing on it. So I understand
that.
I understand that, right?
I agree. Yeah.
My concern here is, there is too much concern in this electoral process that is going down, and I want the candidates to come and deny that they are not concerned. Both sides are concerned.
Okay. All right, sir. Someone says to me, I agree with everything that Mr. Williams said. I have a case in Lodge Hill where my six-year-old nephew was sent a letter asking him to vote. His birthday is the 9th of October, 2012. They show me the ID card. Other one says, they must not like me because I've been living outside for over 28 years and they kicked me off the list because I saw my name in the paper over 10 years ago. Another one says, I do not support what Mark is saying. I have lived abroad for 15 years and I came home on two occasions and was able to vote. So right now, it's not right to remove a person unless they are dead. Other message says, just a note to correct the lady about the paving of the road in Castle Rock, Cane Garden. The cost of paving was paid 100% by the residents and not by the government. And there's another smash up in the Rockley Golf Club area now. So there are two smash-ups in the Rockley area. People, stay off your cell phone now. Do not be distracted by your cell phone. Important messages can be sent via the radio. Radio works. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning. Hello? 4341-790. You can also reach us at 266-IVOB or you can send an email message to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Good morning. Hello.
Hello. Dennis?
Yes, sir.
I am a bit concerned about yesterday's program, which took up a lot of time, talking about why political parties should be funded by government. You know, it is amazing. Dennis, I didn't intend calling, but as you came on this morning, I said, well, look, let me tell you, Dennis, pertains to this. When the government give political parties money to run, who does got to pay the government? Where the government's getting money from?
The electorate.
The taxpayers do.
Same thing. That's who the electorate are. Hopefully they pay tax.
You know, it put me right back to the days of Lloyd Smith. You were aware of. You was a
I know who he is. I know who he is, sir.
Good. Lloyd Smith went into politics as a truck driver and a shopkeeper. Never had a ministry to manage. And I am sure that he did well in his time. You know, he had one fix it right garage by Joe Disco, two sons. And he was a man that never had a ministry. You know the awful thing that worried me? In 1976, as I show you how the taxpayers were supporting these politicians in recent time up to this day, and nobody seems to understand that this money that support the politicians come from taxpayers. Now, in 1976, when Tom Adams took over the government, I don't know if you can recall, salaries as parliamentarian was not that big as it is today. And the argument that Tom Adams, when he did became prime minister, he said, in order to solve corruption, now this corruption thing was talking about since 1973, and he said in order to make politicians not being corrupt, he would pay them a proper salary. That was the beginning, and that started to solve the problem as what we see as corruption. The politicians get good pay. Owen Arthur came in. Owen Arthur gave the politicians a constituency office paid by the taxpayers, personal assistant paid by the taxpayers. Now, and those days in Lloyd Smith, them had nothing so, you know. That and all. In recent times, when the Democratic Labour Party was under financial stress in 1999, the late David Thompson said that the Democratic Labour Party was on its way out because they had no money. And Owen Seymour Arthur again went and got a subvention and give political parties $150,000 a year. Now, how somebody now going to come and tell me that the taxpayers now should pay for a political party when these politicians are millionaires? And they ain't care. You can't pay for education at university for the poor people's children. But you want the taxpayers now to pay for a political party. And by the way, you could recall a couple of years ago, it was said by the Democratic Labor Party that they were going to rebuild the building at a tune of $10 million. You remember that? You recall that, Dennis?
Sir, let me say to you, right? I recall everything you say, but here's the bottom line on all this, right? Money is not the root of corruption, you know. Brother Nasser hit the nail on the head. Greed.
I know. Greed.
You cannot tell me that you could pay a man enough to stop him being greedy. So it is fine to say that political parties should be financed or election campaigns should be financed, quote unquote, by the state. That will not prevent candidate X, Y, or Z from taking gift, bribe, inducement, contribution, or anything else from anybody else with a wink and a nod that says, you know, I will expect you to deal with me properly once you get into the house, right? And you say, yeah, man, sure. And there ain't no way you can stop that. So I hear the argument, sir, and there's some arguments I stay out of because to me, as I said, a very learned attorney say, I have lateral vision, so you ain't gonna talk to me. So I will keep my lateral vision and deal with the lateral that I could deal with. Here's my point. My point is this. What we need to do is stop people lying about political contributions. That's what we need to try to stop.
Yeah.
And since you cannot stop people from lying about political contributions, telling the state to give them a contribution will not fix lying about a contribution. Because I could take, let's say, I want to run for St. Thomas as an independent. So the state gives me $20,000 because I claim I have a political party when I don't. Let's say the state say I'm only giving money to political parties. So I create a political party that does not exist to get $20,000 because I want to run as an independent candidate in St. Thomas. Right? Good. I take the $20,000. What proof I have that I spent it on anything? I could drop a nice list that said I paid a telephonist, a receptionist, whatever you care to call it, $200 a day for 10 days by X. Who's the person I gave the money to? I don't know, an outsider man, my girlfriend, a daughter, an outside child. You ain't gonna know because my name Johnson and her name is Hollingsworth Stantlebury. You understand?
Yeah.
I paid a pollster $2,000 to do so and so and so. Who's the pollster? My nephew, my somebody, or me under another name. Or a shell company that I set up. Because I want to be crooked. It has nothing to do with whether or not I take a contribution. Sir, you cannot legislate morality. You cannot legislate good governance. You have to understand that, let me quote my son, Lord, I got to stop quoting my children. You have to give respect to get respect. It is a matter of understanding the people you deal with. If you treat me with disrespect by feeling you could bribe me every 5 years with a cup of coffee or fixing my roof or giving me $500 in an envelope, then you don't respect me. So then when you get into office, the disrespect continues at another level. We have a system that is broke. The system is broke because we've destroyed the trust that was established between the elected and the electorate. It cannot be fixed by tampering with the system. It has to be fixed by regenerating, regrowth, and rebuilding a trust between those who are elected and those who we ask to elect us every 5 years or 3 years or whatever. Our system, sir, is broke.
Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Now, there's another point that I want to give you. Mm-hmm. With this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have laws in Barbados where everybody is talking, oh, this law was passed, this law was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
You know the hurtful thing about it?
Mm-hmm.
You never heard who are the draft men, the same working class people that reach a position in life could sit down and government draft room, drafting laws, and putting some funds towards the laws that they draft against the very own mankind, poor people. And then you would hear the very legislators who tell you that they come to support the oppressed, and they're putting laws that drafted to oppress the same people again. That asked me the question, the owners, and then the union was there to support the workers. But what happened to them now? You take away the powers from what you call the white class. But you know that the same class that you give them the opportunity to help the poor people is the same class that trampling on the very poor people. You could understand what really happening
sir,
in this country.
Look, let me again say, right? Unfortunately, I'm a student of history. Unfortunately, the only thing I've learned from history is that no one has ever started a war, a revolution, or anything because of poor people. What they've done is they've fought for territory, they've fought for possessions, they've fought for domination.